On today's show, we are going over the Week 2 viewing guide and who fits at Alabama.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's football. I've been watching it for 40 years.
Are you kidding me?
You're listening to Winning Cures Everything.
Game day, baby. Wake up or get out.
Here's your host.
A confident young man. A superb athlete.
Gary Seegers.
Welcome in. Winning Cures Everything. It's a college football podcast. I'm your host, Gary Seegers, at GaryWCE on all the different socials. Most active on X, of course. If you hadn't subscribed, go ahead and do that. Leave a nice 5-star written review on the podcast. And go check out the YouTube. Obviously, we got the picks up over there, all that good stuff. So you know what we're doing. Three Dog Thursday is, of course, happening on Thursday as well. Lots of fun things going on. This is the audio-only version of the show. Hopefully, you are having a wonderful week wherever you might be. And we got much to discuss. Much to discuss. Let's go ahead and dive into this. Andy Staples and Chris Lowe had a byline together at On3. And typically some of these things come out and they are for subscribers only. But this one they put out for the public. And it discussed the boosters and what the mentality is like at the University of Alabama right now after such an absolutely despicable showing against Florida State in Week 1. Now, obviously, there's not going to be any rash decisions made after Week 1. We're heading into Week 2. Alabama plays Louisiana Monroe. They are not going to fire Kalen DeBoer, who has a $63 million buyout. It does drop to $60 million on December 1st, but they're not going to fire this guy in the first game of his second season. That's not going to happen. There's still a lot of the story that has to be written in order to get there. But have we seen coaches fired after year two? Yes. Willie Taggart, Chad Morris, etc. Now, the circumstances were slightly different because in those situations, they were taking over bad programs and they continued to be extraordinarily bad, we'll say. Willie Taggart didn't take over a bad program. He took over a program that was on the decline and he couldn't pull the nose up out of the tailspin. In this situation, you could see that there were cracks in the foundation at Alabama for years. Nick Saban went, let's see, from 2020 all the way through 2023 without a national championship. And that sounds goofy, but that had not happened before. He did make the playoff in 2021 and 2023. He won the SEC in both of those seasons. But you could tell that things, they were not as dominant as they used to be. Right? Things just were not quite the same. The defense was a little bit different. They were giving up a lot of points. They had changed how they were recruiting. You know, you weren't going after the slow, you know, super strong defensive lineman anymore. You were going for fast. You wanted to be able to stop the RPO. Well, now we're kind of in that situation where Alabama is getting beat by teams that used to could not even get close to them. I mean, these are all 14-point underdogs roundabout. And Auburn, Gus Malzahn did have a lot of success against Nick Saban. So what he ran on offense, it's kind of like what Oklahoma, you know, everybody talks about the surprising loss for the 2024 Alabama season was the Oklahoma game. No, not really. If you think about it, it really wasn't that crazy. They had an off week the week before. They had a brand new offensive coordinator. They decided to redo the way their offense looked, so there was no film. Really, Oklahoma last year and Florida State this year were very similar. Oklahoma came out and did a bunch of stuff that they had not done all season last year. They were at home. It was a night game. They knew they had to have that one to make a bowl game. I mean, it was a whole thing. So, yes, absolutely. Now, Vanderbilt was just a complete letdown spot, right? Everybody had gotten super up for Georgia. And this is not excuse-making. This is, here's what happened in these spots. The Michigan game, you know, you can say they should have cared, etc. I think everybody was just done with the season by that point. There were a lot of reasons for those. But the reasons don't excuse no passion. And that's basically what we've got at Alabama right now. It is an issue that it's not just no passion. It's that they don't know where they're supposed to be. And that's a coaching issue, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You can play defense like that if you're going to put up 35 points a game. 35 points probably would have won that game on Saturday. Instead, like I said, the story still has to be written. Florida State might be really, really good. They've got 8 new starters on offense. They are running a completely different scheme with Gus Malzahn. He has a quarterback that fits, I'm talking to a T, the scheme that he wants to run. They have 5 fifth-year offensive linemen that are all 6'3", 310 pounds on average. Like, they got big dudes, they got fast receivers, and they got a quarterback that understands how to run the offense that they are running. That's a big difference. So, if they do end up firing Kalen DeBoer, which is it, and I will tell you this, after hearing his statements, his responses to questions in the SEC teleconference today, and I'm recording this on Wednesday evening, I think DeBoer is shook. He does not sound like a confident man right now. And it sounds almost like he's trying to convince himself that he has a good football team, which is insane to think about in week 2. There were a lot of media people that went to practices this year. They saw this Alabama team. And it's like this team got hit in the mouth and just folded. I mean, like a folding chair. I mean, good gracious. It was disgusting, the Alabama-Florida State game. Like, to the level that they were beaten, it's been a long time since they were beaten that badly. And they were still somewhat in the game. I mean, it was 24-17. They had the ball in the fourth quarter. Had a stop on third down and ended up giving them a first down because of a stupid mistake. Here's the most damning stat out of all of it. There is not a single game in 14 games that Kalen DeBoer has coached in Tuscaloosa. There is not a single game that Alabama has had less penalties than the opponent. And if you're drinking the Kool-Aid and all that, you can say, I would imagine you would probably say that the refs are out to get you and Saban's not there to save you anymore and blah, 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 blah. This is a discipline problem. When Saban was there, the penalties had started. It is an entitlement issue. It's like they feel like they can just walk out on the field and everybody should be scared because they have the crimson helmet on. So what we're getting at is, now that I've ranted forever, who would fit in Tuscaloosa? The Nick Saban style was no longer working. Let me take that back. They had made the playoff 2 out of his last 3 years. And that was the 4-teamer. So it was working some. It was not working to the level that it used to. I don't think anybody will ever be as dominant as those Alabama teams were from 2009 through about 2020. There was like an 11-year span where they were just unbelievable. So who fits it? They've released odds on this, and the best odds, or the shortest odds, to be the next Alabama coach if DeBoer were to be fired, or if we have a Franchione situation and he can't handle the heat and he decides to get out on his own, which, I mean, you got a contract like this, I don't know why you would. Franchione left like to go to Texas A&M, and he got a fat, fat contract to do it. But he left because he was having success. He just wanted to be back in Texas. In this situation, I don't know where DeBoer goes. Like, somebody would obviously give him an opportunity. Would they pay him what Alabama had paid him? I don't think so. But I do also wonder, I mean, there are ways that this stuff can get done. Josh Pastner was the Memphis basketball coach. He left and took the Georgia Tech job for, I believe, about the same money, maybe less. He owed a buyout to the university. The university said, no. We'll pay you a little bit to go ahead and take this job. So he got paid by both. That's how badly Memphis wanted him to not be their basketball coach. In this situation, I don't think DeBoer would drop back to G5 or whatever, but there are certain spots where, especially on the West Coast, where he might work. If things go really, really poorly for Deshaun Foster at UCLA, I mean, you're telling me you couldn't see, like, that'd kind of be the Neuheisel thing, leaving Washington and going to UCLA, and I might have that backwards. I don't remember if that's right or not. Regardless, what I'm trying to say is that I don't know how many people would actually fit. So the shortest odds right now are Tommy Rees, who is the offensive coordinator for, I believe, the Browns, if I'm not mistaken. He spent 1 year with Nick Saban. So I'm not really buying that one. The next shortest is Glenn Schumann, who is the defensive coordinator at Georgia. And I would be okay with that. I think that would fit. He played at Alabama. He coached at Alabama. Everybody thought that he was going to be the DC. If you really want to shake things up and you do believe in DeBoer, but you don't necessarily believe in his defense, you fire Kane Womack, you fire Mo Lingist, and you bring in Glenn Schumann. Like, that seems like a cheaper way of going about it. There will be staff changes after the season if DeBoer is there. That will absolutely happen. Glenn Schumann, I do think fits. I personally am on the Lane train. Like, I don't think Lane Kiffin... I don't think he wanted the job after Saban retired. And he knew that he had a fantastic class coming in. I don't think he wanted it. I think at this point, maybe he would take it. But we'll see. You know, I mean, you never know exactly what these guys are going to do. But if anybody understands the standard of what it takes to win at Alabama, it would be Lane Kiffin. So those would be my two. Glenn Schumann, who probably will not get a look because he has not been a head coach before, and you don't hire coordinators to be head coaches at Alabama. The last time that happened was Mike Dubose, and we know what happened there. You don't learn on the job at Alabama. Aside from that, I mean, who else are you going to go out and get? You need somebody that's got a rough, tough mentality. That's what fits. And the issue is that I don't know. Like, Kurt Cignetti would work, but Kurt Cignetti he'll be 64 by next season. So maybe you got 9 more years, and does he want to leave Indiana? He's got a huge buyout. I don't know that he would want to do that. You know, aside from that, who has proven that would make sense? Is there a young coach that would do a good job? You know, Matt Campbell was on the list from Iowa State. I mean, outside of that, you're not going to bring in somebody like a Rhett Lashley from SMU. You're not going to bring in Jamie Chadwell from Liberty. If Dave Aranda turns things around at Baylor, like, you might could see him fit. But all of the other big-name jobs already have their dude. So you're just kind of going. Like this is a place that is cash-strapped that is still living off of a legend. I don't know that that's exactly what you want. So, yeah, my choice is, if they end up deciding, my choice would be Lane Kiffin. I would go with him. John Sumrall might fit. He certainly would have the mentality for it. But this is, you know, an AAC coach. He coached at Troy. He played in the SEC at Kentucky. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm very curious who could fit that bill. But Sumrall would be a fun fit. That'd be definitely a fun one. All right. After this, let's jump into the Week 2 viewing guide, and we won't spend too long on it because it's kind of a dead week.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.
Fraîche, le spécialiste des produits frais. T'as vu? Il y a un nouveau magasin Fraîche à Redon.
Oui, à nous les produits de saison bien frais et les petits prix chaque jour. Et jusqu'à samedi, le kilo de courge butternut est à 79 centimes.
79 centimes le kilo de courge butternut? Ok, on fonce. Fruits, légumes, viande, poisson, fromage, traiteur, Fraîche, à Redon.
Ou 1,29€ le kilo si coupé. Origine France. Pour votre santé, limitez les aliments gras, salés, sucrés.
All right, week two viewing guide, and I'm not lying when I tell you that there's not a lot of marquee matchups. We got a couple big ones. Aside from that, I mean, it's kind of rough. It's, you know, next week will be better. There are certainly better college football Saturdays. I'm not going to be the one that, you know, I do admit every college football Saturday is a blessing. I agree. However, yeah, I don't know. Like, this is pretty rough. Friday night, 7 p.m. Central Time on ESPN2, you got James Madison at Louisville. It's kind of a prove-it-to-me game for Louisville. Isaac Brown looks fantastic at running back already. We're going to see exactly what Miller Moss looks like in a Jeff Brohm offense, because James Madison can make them uncomfortable enough to, you know, make this a tighter-than-expected game. It's still a 14-point spread for a reason. The only other FBS game that we got on Friday night, Northern Illinois goes to Maryland. That one's 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, so 6:30 p.m. Central, God's time zone, on the Big Ten Network. And Thomas Hammack is, I mean, they're like number 135, maybe, out of 136 in the FBS in returning production. They don't have a lot right now. Maryland does have some interesting pieces, and their skill talent should absolutely get this done for them. I think it could get kind of tight, but we'll see. We'll see what happens there. As far as Saturday, I'm going to start on the big noon kick, 11 a.m. Central. Iowa at Iowa State. This one's on Fox. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. The Cy-Hawk Trophy up for grabs again. Ferentz just knows how to handle Iowa State. Iowa State is favored by 3.5 in some places. Mark Gronowski did not look good in week one. They ran the ball a lot. We'll see what Iowa's got. But this is one of those games that every single time out, it's either really close or Iowa just blows their doors in. Iowa has not lost in Ames since 2011. So we're talking a lot of years. Hawkeyes do have a better overall roster. That is going to be interesting. Interesting. Also at 11 a.m., Illinois at Duke. That one could be a lot of fun. Illinois is a road favorite here. Manny Diaz and that defense certainly are awesome. And Darian Mensah, just not a lot of people talking about this. I mean, that kid was out of this world at Tulane last year. Obviously didn't look good in the last two games that he played against Memphis and Army. But, hey, I mean, that kid was a freshman last year. He came in and just lit the world on fire. So Mensa, I think, could be really, really good for them. Duke knew who they wanted, so they went and they got him. Easy enough. Some other interesting games at 11 a.m. Central. Virginia at NC State. That one's on ESPN2. Central Michigan at Pitt. I don't expect that one to be close, but that one is on ESPNU. And then Baylor at SMU is on the CW at 11 a.m. That's an interesting spot. Baylor, SMU. Yeah, I'm curious. What are these teams going to look like? That's what I want to know. Baylor got beat by Auburn in week one. SMU played a nobody. SMU, of course, they have not beaten Baylor at home since 1983. So I think the fans are going to be pretty riled up for that one. That line is down to 2.5 now. A lot of love for Baylor. You know, a team with their backs against the wall, et cetera. Like, yes, but they're going on the road. Like, you think SMU doesn't want this one? Like, I think that's kind of crazy. Kind of crazy. Moving on to the afternoon games. And we're looking at 2:30 p.m. Central Time. Ole Miss heads to Kentucky. This is an interesting spot always. But Ole Miss at Kentucky is Mark Stoops just knows how to defend Lane Kiffin offenses. I think that's fair. The last three times that these two teams have met, it has been decided by 3 points or less. Kentucky, of course, got the big win in Oxford last year. Also on CBS, you got Oregon hosting Oklahoma State. That one's a 4-touchdown line. That's pretty crazy. And then on ESPN2, we got, I think it's called the Border War now. I don't know exactly. Josh Pate was saying, so I don't remember what it's called. Because it's been so long since they've played it. 2011, I think, was the last time they played it. But Kansas at Missouri. So we get to see Jalen Daniels against an actual, real-life, breathing defense this time. So that should be fun. ESPNU at 3 p.m. Central. West Virginia at Ohio. That was a 3.5-point spread. Very curious what Rich Rod looks like going to Ohio. Ohio gave Rutgers everything they wanted and more last week. So that is an interesting spot as well. South Florida goes to Florida. They're headed up to Gainesville. That one's at 3:15 p.m. on the SEC Network. This one on CBS Sports Network, UAB at Navy. Not a lot of people talking about this. Navy is a huge favorite here. UAB let Alabama State just do whatever they wanted to against them. I think Alabama State had like 6 yards per carry, maybe more. Last week, it was a 52-42 game. The only way for UAB to stay in this game is if their offense is able to click. John Kitna is the quarterback there. He's been around forever. So I'm interested. And then that evening, we got some other fun games. Obviously, the highlight of the entire weekend, Michigan at Oklahoma. That was 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ABC. I'm not exactly a believer in John Mateer, especially against good defenses. Bryce Underwood looked good, but they didn't ask him to do a whole lot against New Mexico. It's like they knew, we're going to save. They just played as vanilla as you could possibly play. Boston College at Michigan State is on NBC. Feels like a coin flip kind of game to me. Dylan Lonergan is the starting quarterback for Boston College. He looks pretty good. Had 500 yards passing in the first game. So he certainly fits the scheme better. We'll see. Michigan State has a better roster overall. So I'm curious about that one. Army at Kansas State is going to be on ESPN. Kansas State does not look good. Like, they made a lot of mistakes in that opening game. They did not look good against North Dakota last week. I wonder how much of that was sleeping or just they had already started their prep for Army. Army, of course, got beat by FCS Tarleton State last week. I do think Tarleton is pretty good, but you shouldn't be losing that game at home. Especially Tarleton on a short week after playing in Portland, Oregon the week before. And then they fly back home to Texas, fly up to West Point. I mean, they were just all over the place. The spot was terrible for Tarleton. And Army still lost to him in overtime. So exactly how bad is this Army team? We'll see about that. Field goal kicker certainly needs some more reps. Vanderbilt and Virginia Tech. That one's on the ACC network at 6:30 p.m. Central. Curious about that one. Kyren Drones didn't look very good coming back from injury. We'll see exactly what that team looks like. Arizona State at Mississippi State. That one's on ESPN2. Mississippi State looked pretty good last week. Like, Arizona State didn't look good against Northern Arizona, but, you know, like, they didn't exactly, again, pretty vanilla game plan. The problem that I had with their game plan was that Tyson, the wide receiver, had 17 targets, and Sam Levitt was their leading rusher in the game. I mean, you're playing an FCS school that's not very good. Why are we not trying to do some other things? Like, you should have been able to win that with your second string, and yet we saw nothing. Mississippi State is pretty good on the lines of scrimmage, I think. And with a healthy Blake Shapen, I think the offense can get clicking. So that's going to be a more interesting game than I think people are prepared for. Georgia Southern at USC is on FS1. That one is 6:30 p.m. Central. And, you know, Clay Helton going back to USC, that's kind of interesting. I suppose. I don't know. Like, it's a 28-point spread. Who knows? San Diego State at Washington State. Washington State looked terrible last week against Idaho. And that's an Idaho team that lost their coach, lost basically all of their good players. How bad is Washington State? And how much improved is San Diego State, you know, in year two of the Sean Taylor, I blanked on his name. Either way, you get the point. Former Colorado offense coordinator for a former Kent State head coach. Finally, last game of the evening is also Stanford at BYU on ESPN. That one's 9:15 p.m. Central Time. And, I mean, it's an 18.5-point spread. Before the season, I made it 13.5. But Stanford, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Can you keep Ben Golbrinson at quarterback with as bad as he looked against Hawaii? And that Hawaii team went to Arizona and just got absolutely ransacked last week. I mean, that is rough stuff. Rough stuff. Oh, I did not talk about this one on CBS Sports Network at 7 p.m. Central. So that'll be 5 o'clock local time. Sorry. Yeah, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. UNLV is hosting UCLA. If UNLV finds a way to pull that one off, can you imagine how flat the Nico hype is going to be? I mean, that is just, and it's a tight spread, about 2.5, I believe, last I looked at it. That's a scary spot for UCLA. They've got a way better roster. UNLV's defense did not look good in week one, obviously looked better last week, but they were playing against Sam Houston State, so not exactly a good test. I'm interested in that one. Dan Mullen loves to play the role of the underdog. He's better when people are doubting, and a lot of teams, a lot of players, a lot of everything doubt UNLV right now. UCLA looked abysmal against Utah. I'm talking just only put up 10 points. I believe it was 36-10. Just got destroyed in that game. So, yeah. Yeah, that was a rough one. Very, very rough. All right, that is going to do it for our viewing guide. Best game to watch, probably Michigan-Oklahoma, just to see what everybody looks like. And then from there, mostly the noon games. Kentucky Ole Miss could be fun. Of course, it could also be a 50-point blowout. So we'll see what ends up happening. All right, that is going to do it. Don't forget, of course, all of our sponsors, etc. You can find the links in the description. And along with that, we got all kind of stuff going on. BettingCFB.com, Three Dog Thursday. We're just keeping everything rolling. We got your football content right here. So make sure you are subscribed everywhere that you need to be subscribed. With that said, Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. God bless college football and hopefully all of your tickets cash this week.
Thanks for listening to Winning Cures Everything. Make sure and subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. And make sure to leave a nice 5-star review. You can follow Gary on Twitter at GaryWCE. And the show is at Winning Cures. Be sure to check out the merch in our web store and share the show.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.